Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So, Jimmy, how was your weekend?
This weekend has been... This week has been up and down for me. A little personal problem, but that's fine. But I did go to an 80s night at a bar. I hadn't been to an 80s night, or I haven't been to a bar in a long time. So I definitely had a few more drinks than I wanted to have, and I definitely danced more than I feel like I should have.
You know what? As long as you're enjoying yourself and nobody got hurt, it sounds like a good night to me.
Oh, definitely. It was a lot of fun. I'm an 80s baby. I mean, barely 80s baby. But, you know, I'm an 87, and I appreciate those 3 years that I had. And I remember all the songs from those 3 years. So.
Yeah. See, I'm always hesitant. Even though technically I was born in the 80s, I never really call myself an 80s baby. Because they say you don't even really form memories until you're like maybe 4 or 5 years old. So by the time I was able to like form memories and understand stuff, the 80s were already over. So I'm like, eh, I'm a 90s baby.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm an 80s kid. Like, I love 80s. Who doesn't love the 80s movies and like 80s music? But 90s is so good too. It's tough. I might just claim both.
I'm in love with the 90s. I'm all right with 90s because it still feels like far enough removed. Like, funny enough, I just saw a post on Reddit, was it maybe yesterday or the day before, that was saying kids talking about the 90s today is like, or excuse me, it wasn't kids talking about the 90s, but it's like people talking about the 90s today is like people talking about the 60s and the 90s. And that kind of just blows my mind.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's... Wow, are we that far removed? I guess maybe we feel it. Well, no.
Yeah, I mean, almost, 1990 was what, over 30 years ago, so.
Dang. I mean, yeah, because of my age. I guess that makes sense. Mathematically, yes. That all checks out. Dude, I feel old, but I embrace it. You know, the 90s were such a great time. There was nothing like going to, like, the Best Buy or whatever. Do you remember the same? There used to be a CD store that you could listen to any CD. Like, you would bring them a CD and you could sample it before you wanted to
buy it. that was a lot of them. I think Sam Goody did that. And what's it called? Like, FYE, For Your Entertainment. There was a few others. I feel like Sam Goody was, like, the 90s store because... It did not make it too far into the 2000s.
Do you remember going to the stores and like sometimes they would have a CD like already set up for you to listen to and you put on the headphones and yep. You kind of go through all the track. Man, those were the days. Like that's how you like people are like, oh, vinyl. I'm like, no, give me a compact disc. That's what I want. And a giant CD Walkman player.
Yeah, I'm of that weird age. So, like, both of you and I are the older millennials to where we grew up with the internet, but we kind of were in that weird crux where we were still kind of in the Gen X zone. So, we have a lot of those, like, legacy memories and the new memories. So, like, I remember being maybe 8, 9 years old, having a film camera. We'd have to go down to Walgreens to get it to get it developed. And it wasn't like, instant. It was like 7 days. So you didn't even know if your pictures looked good until 7 days after you turned in the film. And that's after you turned in the film. It could have been months before you turned in the film. I'm sure my mom still has film rolls for when we were kids that haven't been developed yet somewhere in storage. So, you know, I remember that. I remember having a Walkman with a cassette player. And I remember having like the cheap Walkman, which didn't have a rewind button, but had a fast forward. So the way you would just do it is you'd pop out the tape, turn it around, fast forward, turn it, pop it back out, turn it around again. And that was your rewind. I remember the big old Discman that like had zero stability. Like you just walk up and down the stairs. You've skipped 3 songs.
Man. Oh, the 90s. Man. Yes. The walk. I remember having to like, if there was a trip, you would have to hold it like really steady just so mm-hmm. like nothing would happen to it. And then, oh, did you ever have a binder of CDs?
Like I little did.
Cases, CD? Yeah, man. Oh, now that's what, was it? Is it now that's what I call music? Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah. They're like on volume 80 or something now.
Man, I remember volume 4. That was my jam. Volume 4.
Yeah.
Those were like, you were like, I should not get any CDs, and I'll just wait for that one. Because it's all the hits from that time.
Yes, I do remember when the first Now That's What I Call Music came out. I don't remember how old I was, but I do remember that being a thing in America. And I think they still do it. And it's, yeah, it's, I forget, it's high up there in numbers. Like maybe it's all the way up to, according to this, it's up to 85. So
85? Now That's What I Call Music? Man.
Yeah. So, man, it's just so crazy to think about that. Like, we remember number one.
Okay. I'm going to list some. Wait, no, this isn't right. This is number one. Where's Now What That's What I Call Music, the first one? They also have like spin-offs. Okay. I'm going to name some songs from Now That's What I Call Music. I mean, the first CD. Okay. It's Together Again by Janet Jackson.
Don't remember it.
As Long As You Love Me by the Backstreet Boys.
Remember that one well.
Oh, The Way by Fastball.
Yes, and they're, if I'm not mistaken, they're an Austin band.
Yeah, that's such a good song, but like so sad when you find out what it's about.
Yeah. Well, because if I remember correctly, I could be 100% wrong, but if I remember correctly, when they wrote the song, they didn't know like what the outcome was. They just kind of, for those who don't know, the song is about an old couple that gets lost on a road trip. And the song is supposed to be happy and everything. And they sing about like, oh, all the adventures they went on and stuff. Because the guy wanted to, you know, the artist wanted to imagine like, oh, these, nothing bad happened to these people. They went and had a great time and had a great adventure. And then they're going to come home. But then in real life, they were found dead. So, yeah, not a happy song.
I feel like if you imagine it Fastball's way, it's way better. So, you know, it's, oh man, I used to love this song. Flagpole Sitting by Harvey Danger.
Yep, I remember that one.
Say You'll Be There by the Spice Girls.
Honestly, I only really remember Spice Up Your Life and Wannabe. Oh, and To Become One. Those are like the only Spice Girls songs I remember.
Oh man. Okay. If I say the name of the band, do you think you can guess the song?
Sure.
Okay, Cherry Poppin' Daddies.
Zoot Suit Riot.
Yes. Oh, my God. This is crazy. There's a Barbie Girl on here. Fly Away by Lenny Kravitz. Dude, I need to... Is Now That's What I Call Music on Spotify?
It might be.
I mean, I bet someone just compiled it into a playlist.
True. There's no reason to have the actual album on there. If the individual songs are there, you can just list them.
There is, someone has compiled the playlist. I'm adding this to my playlist now. Oh, this is gonna, tomorrow's work drive is gonna be a great one.
Yeah, it's I don't have kids yet, but I know like when I was growing up, my mom would talk about all the music that she used to listen to back in the day, and you know it was I guess different back then. But when I hear it now, it just sounds weird because it's like, oh, you know, we shared a record player with the neighbors, or we shared albums with the neighbors, and so we'd swap and all this stuff, and, you know, we'd listen to Beatles or whatever, and then, you know, that sounds weird. Then, you know, nowadays, or at least when I was growing up, you had CDs, and you can get cassettes anywhere or whatever, but I'm like, man, when I have kids, I wonder how crazy I'm going to sound to them when I'm like, oh, yeah, we used to have to sit and download music because it was so expensive, and I had a 56K modem, so it would take me an hour to download one song.
And then you were worried about Metallica coming after you.
Exactly.
Gosh. Life was a lot easier in the 90s and early 2000s. Maybe that's because I was a kid, but
I think that's what it is. I think if you ask any kid in America, just about any kid, not to disparage like kids who are in bad situations or whatever, but just to, in general, I think if you ask any kid and then ask them when they're an adult, most of them will probably say, yeah, life was easier as a kid. And that's how it should be, to be quite honest. Like, getting a little existential here, but like, I have rural family, and a lot of them have like that mindset of like, I talking to my grandparents and whatnot, like, oh, you know, the rural kids are much more hardworking than the city kids are, because they had to work on the farm when they were young and yada yada yada. And I'm like, that's good and all, and I understand that that this is coming from a place of privilege. Not everybody has the ability to not force their kids to work. You know, farms, especially back then, were very dependent on child labor. But yeah, like, my thoughts are like, you know, let's say you live to be 75, 80 years old. Let's say 80. You know, you're going to have like 60 some odd years of hard work and worrying about taxes and, you know, the future and global warming and stuff. Like, let the kids have 10, 15 years to just be carefree.
Yeah, I just, you know, there's so much stress growing up. Like, once you like finish whatever your secondary education is, you know, like you got high school, and then whatever you do next, no matter what, it's like college or vocational school or whatever, right after that, the world is different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's no more spring breaks. There's no more summers. No more just lazy days. It's all just like hustle. So,
yeah.
Enjoying the time is important.
And I get it. It's, you know, it's coming from a place of privilege. Not every family has that luxury to be able to give kids freedom. Some families are struggling and kids need to go to work. However, I'm also hesitant to treat it like that is a good thing, or that should be the standard, that kids should go to work or whatever. Like, in my mind, kids should be allowed to be kids, because there's going to be many, many, many years. In fact, like, the 75% of their life is going to be work, taxes, stress, family things, stuff like that. So, you know, just let them enjoy life for the small piece.
Yeah, there's plenty of time to worry about everything else. So,
yep. Coming straight to you from the King of the Hill podcast. Yeah.
That was kind of my week. What did you do this week?
Oh, nothing that exciting. Largely because, so we have this atmospheric river that's going on in California now. And I, you know, just like most people in San Francisco, I don't have a car. I walk or Uber or bus or bike everywhere. Which means if it's raining, I don't really want to be outside. So it was supposed to, like, the whole week, the forecast was it was going to rain all day Sunday. So I was just like, okay, I'm not going to plan anything for Sunday. But then it didn't rain. So I was just like, okay. Or I mean, it did rain, but on and off. It wasn't like raining all day. On Saturday, I did go and catch Suzanne, Fury of the Gods. And then on Friday, a friend was in town and I got dinner with them. So, you know, it's been pretty fun. Aside from that, just more or less a routine work week.
What'd you think of Shazam? No spoilers, but just like...
No spoilers. I did enjoy it. I don't know. It's kind of hard to enjoy now, just virtue of the fact that you don't know what the future of the DC universe is going to be. So, like, I have a hard time getting too invested, because I'm like, is there going to be a sequel? Is this it? Is there going to be a continuation? That being said, as a standalone film, I thought it was all right.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. This is where I'm really debating, and this is kind of me. I don't know. I feel like I should just do it, because I normally would for a Marvel movie. Marvel movies, I'm really excited to go back and see it another time in theaters. And I feel like, because I know it's continuing story and it's investing, and my second watch through, maybe I'll pick out more things. I really would like to see Shazam again. Like, I know I want to see it a couple more times, but do I need to see it in theaters? That's the question.
I saw the first one once in theaters and then saw it multiple times on streaming afterwards. So that very much will be what I do this time around once in theaters and stream a lot later.
Yeah, I'm debating. I don't know, maybe. I did go watch Scream 6 again this past weekend. This past weekend was a lot. Like, I crammed in a lot this weekend. I think my second watching of Scream was, like, I liked it more the second time.
Okay. So,
I don't know if that... I definitely say when it comes out on digital, you should watch it again. I feel like it's worth a second watch.
Scream, I absolutely will watch. Yeah, other than that, didn't do too much. Just, you know, kind of work, and which doesn't sound fun, I know, but did a lot of work. But, you know, played some video games through the week. I usually don't do much of anything of interest during the week, just due to the work schedule. And then, of course, got dinner with friends, and with a friend, rather. And then, yeah, it was pretty good overall weekend.
Nice. I like a chill week and, like, you know, kind of chill weekend. You know, it's perfect just relaxing and just kind of being in.
We need those sometimes.
I would like them more often because I feel like they don't happen often enough. But I also feel like I don't take advantage of them when they do happen. You know, like, it's a chill day and you're just kind of, like, relaxing. And then you're like, this day just went by so fast. I didn't appreciate it as much.
Yeah, that does happen as every so often. Weekends do seem to be shorter as you get older, which I guess is normal. I mean, also, when you just think about it, like, time's different when you're older. Like, you have, you know, they say time moves slower when you're younger. And I think a lot of it has to do with just the fact that, like, when you've only lived 5 years, a day seems like a lot. When you've lived, like, 35 years or 50 years or whatever, then a day is a much smaller percentage of your overall life.
Yes, this is true. Yeah, because I definitely on Fridays, at Friday nights, I'm always like, oh, the weekend's almost over. Even though that's kind of the start of my weekend. I just, we need 3 weekend days. Push for that.
Though I think Hank would have a problem with that since he's such a hard worker. Yeah, I know that was a weird segue, but here we go.
It's actually our last segue.
Oh, that's a good point. This will be our last segue.
Oh, sad, guys. Maybe we'll do more.
I'm sad too. So this is our last episode of King of the Hill. We will have one more episode of the podcast where we wrap things up and just kind of relive these past year and the whole series and stuff. But yeah, this is going to be our last episode, and this is the actual last episode of King of the Hill, To Sirloin with Love, Season 13, Episode 20. Though I guess, so there's some people who argue it's not the last episode, because Mike Judge and team did complete 4 episodes, but then when the show got canceled, essentially, they were never able to air those episodes. So this was set to be the last episode, the cap of the show. However, in the DVD releases or the Blu-ray releases, as well as syndication, they added those extra 4 episodes in. So there are some people who argue that another Manic Conde is the actual last episode. But no, according to Mike Judge and everybody, this is the last episode. For now, because, you know, when we started the podcast, the show was off the air, but 1 year later, there's a confirmation that Hulu has ordered new episodes. So, you know, in a year and a half, there's going to be another season of King of the Hill. But, you know, for now, this is the original ending.
I have a question.
Yep.
Okay. I know we're coming back for however many episodes. Can we place that before to Sirloin with Love? Like, you know, like in some in-between time, and then this could still remain the finale. I love this finale so much. I don't want to, like, lose it. It's probably what,
like, phase. We could call this, like, the phase one finale, and then whenever they have another finale for the continuation or reboot or whatever you want to call it, we can call that the phase two finale, I guess.
Maybe. Well, I'll wait and I'll judge at the end of when we see it, and then maybe it's good.
Yep. And just like, some of the best episodes of King of the Hill. This one is a Bobby and Hank heavy one, so it is great. The episode starts, as many episodes start, at the Hill House. It's morning, and Bobby runs in. He's like, pajama slide! He's sliding across the linoleum floor in his pajamas and jumps up. And Hank's like, I haven't even finished breakfast, and already the boy ain't right. And then Peggy's like, oh, by the way, Hank, I'm going to be going to Min's. We're having a ladies' game night. And Hank's like, oh, so you're not going to be there? Hank just prefers when Peggy is there because she kind of runs interference when things get awkward. But she's like, no, I'm going to go and play Scrabble, and I'm working on a bunch of two-letter words, which is funny considering the last episode we did, she was all about Boggle, and she always talks about Boggle, but for whatever reason, this time she's all about Scrabble. In the alley, Hank's trying to get advice from the guys, and Dale's like, man, a man and son bonding is a beautiful thing and a chance to talk and share wisdom. And Hank's like, yeah, but I was hoping we could do something where we didn't have to have a conversation. We're just, you know, so different. And Bill's like, why don't you rent a movie? And Hank's like, nah, Bobby wants to act it out. Bucky's like, why don't you just go out to movies? Like, no, Bobby likes to whisper to me. And Dale's like, oh, dinner. You have options. Because, like, if there's a lull, you can talk to the waiter or stick a breadstick in your mouth or something. And Hank's like, well, there is this new steakhouse in McManorberry that I want to try out. And as long as there's no live music, we can go. So they go to the steakhouse. It's called Chops. It's kind of a semi-fancy place. It's not like a Ruth's Chris, but, you know, maybe like Black Angus level or something, which just reminds me of a Patton Oswalt joke that, you know, go check it out on your own time. The small talk is awkward between Hank and Bobby. You know, how's school? Fine. How's work? Fine. And Hank starts munching on a breadstick because there's just such a lull and he doesn't want to talk about anything. They bring in the waiter brings them their Kansas City steaks, and Bobby's like, excuse me, this steak isn't prime. And guy's like, I assure you it is. And, you know, he points out all the flaws in the fat ratio, and the tiny bone side is the most tender, but you didn't give us that. And the waiter's like, look, 2 days ago I worked at a shoe store. Let me get my manager. And Hank's like, boy, Bobby, you really know your steaks. And out of nowhere, like, this guy at another table's like, you certainly do. I'm a professor of meat science over at Hamlet County Junior College. My name is Roger Stiles. I'm part of the meat examination team. And he's like, Bobby's like, what's the meat examination team? And Hank's like, it's like debate team, but instead of doing something useless, you get to grade meat. And they want to bring Bobby on board because he has passion, because apparently this guy goes to the steakhouse like every single night looking for his mystery, you know, his ringer, his special person for the team. And Bobby's interested, and he's like, yeah, Dad, why didn't you ever tell me about this stuff? And he's like, because you're never interested in anything good. And then Bobby's like, well, can I join the team? And Hank's like, I've been waiting 13 years to hear that. Yes, you may. As many times as we've seen Steak in King of the Hill, this is the first time we've seen Bobby, like, be proficient at steak, I guess you could say. Like, he's never really made any comments about the steaks or anything. Now, you could also argue that most of the time when we see him eating steak, he's eating it at home, and Hank probably knows how to cook it properly, but still.
I think it's more that he ordered a high-quality steak, and that's not what he got. Like, at home, it's kind of just like, whatever steaks we buy are the steaks we're having. But here, he ordered a specific steak from, I mean, this, it looks like a really fancy steakhouse. I mean, yeah, not fancy. There's people drinking wine in the background. So, I mean, and breadsticks, right? That's fancy.
I guess so. I think the reason I'm like, it didn't seem like the super high-end kind, which I feel like Hank wouldn't go to anyway. It seems like kind of middle of the road.
I would say it's the, like, I don't know. It's a step above a Chili's. Or an Applebee's. It's a step above Applebee's, I feel like.
Okay, I can give you that one.
Or maybe Bobby's just so bored. You know what I mean? Like, he's had this steak knowledge, but the conversation's so lulled, he's like, I gotta say something.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. He's just like, might as well say something.
But I do wonder where he picked up this skill. Like, I don't know. Bobby's always been interested in comedy and stuff like that. I never seen him interested in food. Like, he likes eating, but I've never seen him be like a foodie.
Yeah, he's never seemed to be like an expert at food. He's enjoyed food. But yeah, he's never really been like a food critic, expert level type person. But hey, meat is something that Hank and Bobby can bond over now. It looks like they just happen to stumble upon his area of expertise. The next day, they're at the yard, and Hank's like showing off Bobby's skills and has a bunch of steaks on the grill. And it's like, what are these? And Bobby's like, 2 ribeye, 1 porterhouse, 3 fillets, and 1 New York strip. And everybody's all happy. And Luann's like, oh, you must be proud that you have such a smart kid. And Peggy's like, yeah, this is a great skill that he has. And of course, the Supernusa folks are there. They're like, oh, yeah, this is going to help him skip a semester at hamburger school. And it's like, yeah, it's a nowhere talent, but it's so cute that you think it's something interesting. They pass out the steaks, and you know, Lucky looks at one. He's like, you know, I think my profile's always looked like a New York strip, which surprisingly it does, at least the way they chose to draw it. And then they're like, man, Bobby, where did you learn all this? And then there's some flashbacks to like baby Bobby being held by Peggy, and then Hank has just like a steak on butcher paper showing it to Bobby saying like, you'll get to have this one day. And then we see a CNC and it's like the cow goes moo. But then Hank also has like a chart of a cow, and he's like, the cow also says I have 11 distinct cuts of meat, all with different textures and flavors. which it's a funny visual, because Hank like literally has an easel with the display on it, and he has like the pointer and everything, like he's teaching a course at school or something, but he's like teaching a 2-year-old Bobby who's on the CNC. But hey, it paid off, because now he's the steak expert.
It doesn't surprise, like, I really like that moment. Oh, this whole episode's so good, honestly. Like, I love seeing Hank interact with baby Bobby. I love seeing a baby Bobby. Baby Bobby is so adorable, like in the little wrapped up. He looks like, I don't know. Do you remember those, like, this might be an 80s toy or a night. It was these worm things, and they had a glow tails, and they looked like little babies.
I'm trying to think.
Glow worm things?
Maybe that was it.
I don't know if it was. Yeah, they're called glow worms.
I think I know what you're talking about. I don't think we ever had one growing up, but I think I know what you're talking about.
Oh, I've never had one, but that's what Bobby looks like.
Oh, as a baby, yeah.
Yeah, as a baby. I kind of always wonder when, I don't know, it makes me sad thinking about it too. Like, there must have been a weird moment where, you know, Bobby grew up and Hank also, like, you know, started spending less time with Bobby and hit their interests divided. But I really love seeing Hank so just encouraged. I don't know. I just love Hank and young Bobby moments. It's just a great thing. And then Bobby getting to show off. I love when Bobby has a genuine interest or hobby or whatnot, and Hank's so supportive of it. Those are my favorite episodes. And like, this part was just like everything.
I think anytime we start to see like their relationship, and I don't know, when Hank really likes Bobby, not to say that he never likes Bobby, he clearly does, he's his son, but when they're like really bonding and really connecting, those are always some of the best ones.
Yeah. Oh, I guess before when they're bonding, and then especially when Hank is not pushy, if that makes sense. You know, when he's letting Bobby naturally do it, because sometimes they'll have a similar hobby or whatnot, and Hank will be like overbearing and kind of take over the hobby. This one is very like, he's just letting Bobby be Bobby, and Bobby showing off, and Bobby kind of doing that. And then it's just a great episode. Guys, watch this episode.
Yes, it is. And I don't know, they're just, it's so loving. Next, we see them at the school. They're at the Hamlet County Junior College, which I wouldn't say I take exception with it, but like, we never hear about this community college, except the only other one we hear about, I think, is like Arlen Community College, which Luann goes to. But whatever, Pinellas County has its own community college. They're excited because they're like, hey, this is the kid who's going to help us take down Texas A&F. And, all the kids are super into this whole process. Like, they're really into it. And Bobby is super psyched, and Bobby knows Ribeye, and he knows everything. So everybody's just ready to go. At dinner, Peggy and Hank are sitting down and eating, and Peggy's like, oh, I think Bobby's late from practice, and dinner's getting cold. And Hank's like, yeah, I know. Isn't it great? And Bobby comes back talking about how he's a child prodigy and he's doing so well. And he has this tape called Slaughterhouse from Kill to Plate. And he asks Hank if he wants to watch it with him. And he's like, I'd love to. And they watch it like they're watching a normal movie. They have popcorn and they're all into it. And yeah, it's weird. I don't know if you've ever been to a slaughterhouse, but it is there's nothing that appealing about it.
Wait, have you been to a slaughterhouse?
Yep, when I was like 11.
Wait, what for?
My grandpa was a cattle farmer. He still is, or he was, he's retired. But when I was visiting, when we were really young, he had to make a run to the slaughterhouse, like get rid of an old cow or whatever, and he had me with him and walked inside, and yeah, that's that.
Yeah, I've never been to a slaughterhouse, but in high school I was a part of FFA and I was in agriculture classes, and we watched two different slaughterhouse videos, one for beef, one for the cows, and one for pigs. And I always remember this because for me, for that class, it was a split class. So we would do the first half of class, and then we break for lunch, and then we come back for the last half of class. It was a really weird schedule. But if I didn't finish my lunch, I'd bring my lunch back. And I remember bringing my lunch back during the slaughterhouse video and just eating my chicken tenders while watching pigs get slaughtered.
All right. I never did that. I was never in any of the farm programs at school, but that, I don't know. That just seems like an interesting choice there to have kids like eat whilst doing the slaughtering or watching slaughters.
Hey, it goes full circle, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess there's some room for the argument that like, if you're going to eat the animal, you should at least like have to go through the process of seeing what they, that whole, I guess, process that they have to go through, which, yeah. I mean, I don't know how I necessarily agree with that or whatever, but I think it's a fair argument to make.
I mean, Hank's excited to watch the video with him.
I mean, he is. He definitely is. I mean, like I said, they're like watching it like they're watching a movie, like a movie, like a blockbuster, like the Avengers or something. They have popcorn and they're all into it. But hey, here we go. Competition day. And I guess it's the first competition. And granted, I guess now that I think about it, it makes sense. At first, I was like, how are they already in like the semifinals or in the county position or whatever? Because this is like the qualifying round to state. And then I'm like, oh, well, Bobby just joined the team late. The team probably has been going on for months now. But anyway, they're at the competition. Hank is super proud of Bobby. And, they just need to get fourth place and they can qualify for state. But Bobby's like, oh, no, we're going to get first. And they go through all the process and whatnot. They get to the final question. And it's like, which carcass has a muscular round? And, they're all kind of sitting around there. And the community college team is like, hey, let's send Bobby. Bobby knows muscle. And so everybody cheers him on. And Joseph doesn't fully get what's going on because he's like, eat the whole thing, Bobby. Bobby guesses number two, but it winds up being number four. So you lose second place and they're pushed down to fourth place, which is still qualifying, but it's not first place like Bobby got them all excited about. After the break, they're at home, and Bobby understandably looks down. Hank doesn't understand. He's like, you know, you're going to state. Yeah, you got fourth place, but you still qualified for state. And Bobby even got a trophy, and I don't know. He's not feeling good about anything. He's just being so hard on himself, even though it's his first competition. And Hank's like, you know, if I had a nickel for every time I buckled during a competition, I'd have five nickels. And Hank's just like, you need to be happy. Your team's going to state, and that's all that matters. And Bobby's like, you know, usually your pep talks go in one ear and out the other, but this time I'm really feeling the pep. Bobby goes to school, and the team just tears into him. And even the coach is like, yes, Bobby screwed up. Yes, he should be embarrassed. And yes, it's too late to replace him with somebody else. But, you know, let's give him another chance kind of thing, which, okay, that's kind of a backwards compliment. That's not a compliment at all, actually. And one of the guys is like, you know, no one can hear you scream from inside of Meat Locker.
I don't even know what to say. This team is it, like, I mean, of course Bobby can't be in a team with normal people.
Yeah, of course not. Well, I mean, there's got to be a conflict. If there's no conflict in the episode, what's the point in watching it, I guess?
What was I going to say? I mean, I guess Bobby did walk up too confidently up there, you know? I think this is a buying into your own hype syndrome. I feel like Bobby fell victim to. He was riding high, and then when he got there. But I love that Hank isn't so pushy. You know what I mean? Like, he's just kind of, he's not pushing Bobby too hard to be better. He's kind of just like, hey, we did it. We're going to the next round kind of thing.
Yeah, which is actually, I don't know if I want to say like that's his anti-Hank, because it's not. But you don't really see that from Hank too much, where he is like complimenting Bobby and making Bobby feel good. So I like that. In fact, Hank is so happy that in the next scene, we see him in the alley, and he's got a piece of paper, and he's like, I'm making a deposit on the meat team's chartered bus. And like, you're chartering a bus? That's a sign of a real competition. And he's like, yeah, we're going to be talking about this for the rest of our lives. At the restaurant, Bobby's with his team, and they're all practicing, like going over flashcards and stuff like that. And then Bobby's like, well, after we've studied all this beef, why don't we have some? And now all of a sudden the team's like, you don't sell your palate the day before. And the coach is like, yeah, this is going to be all sides family style. And we're going to have an omelet to share. And then they see Texas A&F at another table. And like, hey, let's stab them. No, let's blind them. Bobby, pass through the red pepper flakes. And he jokes around like, okay, guys. But he doesn't, like, he thinks they're joking. But they're like giving him a serious stare, and they just grab the red pepper flakes out of his hand, and they run over and just throw them into the guy's face. And Bobby is like shocked and scared and disgusted. But like, the team's like, he's thinking like a champ. When Bobby's like, what is this guy doing? Well, he's thinking like a champ. And Bobby's just having none of this. On the drive home, Hank was like talking about, oh, did you eat a lot of steak today and whatever? And it's like, no, we didn't eat protein unless you can count eggs as protein. And Hank's like, you know, I don't. He's just like, man, these people are just a bunch of weirdos. And I don't know if I want to be with them anymore. And Hank's like, a boy with a unicorn ranch in his bedroom shouldn't be calling other people weirdos. That's right. We know about Rancho Unicorno. Hank just thinks, you know, they have a lot of team spirit. And he's like, team spirit's like the Holy Spirit, only more powerful. And Bobby's like, I just want to quit the team. And Hank isn't happy. He's like, you're getting a chance to compete in state. And that state is Texas. And Hank's like, well, you know what? I already paid for the seat. I'm going to go support the team anyway. And Bobby's like, fine, enjoy being with a bunch of crazy people rambling about meat. And Hank's like, you know, I will. How does that not disqualify them? Like, not to like nitpick or whatever, but wouldn't that disqualify them?
I mean, I'm not going to, something's going to happen in the next scene. And I'm like, Maybe this is just the thing that, you know, it goes back and forth between. I don't know. Or maybe it's such a low priority on the, like, the university's list of things. They're like, our meat grading team is kind of like way down there. We got bigger problems.
I guess. I mean, yes, that would make sense. But still, it's like, I don't know. It seems so weird. But yeah, I feel like that, like, you know, making jokes or something like that seems fine. But like physically assaulting somebody seems a little not good, to say the least. But I don't know. Like, if you went and, like, you know, did a Nancy Kerrigan or whatever and run and hit somebody in the shin, that's not going to go well for you. But whatever. I don't know. Even if it has nothing to do with the contest, isn't that essentially assault?
Yeah, I don't think you could. Okay, if you just throw crushed red pepper at someone, is it assault? Or was he aiming for I don't remember now.
No, he was aiming for their eyes.
Well, yeah, then I guess, you know, we got to call the police.
It's weird. And then I like, now granted, we see this in Hank a lot, where I don't think Hank understands, like, how extreme people can be. So when Bobby is like, oh, these guys are weirdos, I want to have nothing to do with them, Hank's just like, I think Hank naturally thinks Bobby is the weirdo. And so when Bobby calls other people weirdos, it's just because Bobby doesn't understand normal social interactions or something like that. And so Hank's like, oh, you know, Bobby, that's nothing. You shouldn't worry about it, yada, yada, yada. And then it turns out, well, a lot of times Bobby's surprisingly right, or at least surprising to Hank. But yeah, it's funny how, you know, oh, we're going to eat an egg omelet. And Hank's like, I don't consider eggs protein. And Rancho Unicorno and Team Spirit's more powerful than Holy Spirit, which is something kind of weird to hear come from Hank since he's such a religious guy. But all right.
Well, yeah. I mean, they go to church every Sunday. I think they're like respectful religious people. I mean, they're not over eccentric. I don't know. Never mind. Forget I said anything. Anyway, Rancho Unicorno.
I imagine that'd be pretty hard for him to hide. Like, it's not like his room is huge. I imagine if he has a ranch, it's probably like taking up the entire floor of his closet, or it's like all under his bed or something, which eventually somebody would have found.
I don't know. Do you think maybe Bobby was hiding it, but he doesn't hide his troll dolls or anything else.
That's true.
I was going to say, I really feel like Bobby is not ashamed of anything for the most part.
I guess it's just the way Hank said it made it sound like Bobby was indeed trying to hide it. How he was just like, that's right, we know about Rancho Unicorno, as if like they found it hidden underneath a blanket or something.
Do you imagine that he built like a sign, like a little, you know, when you go to ranches, there's like ranch, blah, blah, it's like Rancho Unicorno.
I would be more shocked if he didn't. That just seems like something he would do, and that's probably how he found out. Like, I don't think Hank's creative enough to have come up with the name Rancho Unicorno. He probably saw like a sign that Bobby had up there for it.
Also, unicorns are awesome now after I've seen Shazam 2. Just putting it out there, unicorns are pretty true. Good cats. I also love that Hank is so respectful of the reserving a seat on a charter bus kind of etiquette.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Hank being a team player, being a star football player, he kind of takes that stuff seriously. At the bus, Hank checks in and he's like, oh, no, it's just me. And, you know, the person sounds sad, like, oh, like you've been ditched on a date or something like that. While they're on the bus, Hank's like talking to this cheerleader near him named Kaylee. Is like, I just don't get it. He just quit on me. All of a sudden, they realize that the bus is being hijacked by Texas A&F, and they drive the bus into a ditch. And they have a taser now, and they're threatening everybody. You know, put your cell phones in this bag. And one of the guys is like, I knew this was happening. He's like, why do you think you? How would you think that? Or why would you think that we'd be hijacked? And guys like, oh, these competitions always get crazy and the ANF people leave. And yeah, to your point, like this, like, how is this not disqualified Texas ANF?
But for them to be like, I knew something like this was going to happen. It's like, that's what makes me think this kind of stuff happens all the time. I love Hank's reaction, though. Why would you think this would happen?
Back at the Hill House, Bobby's in his room and he looks outside and he sees that there's a Strickland delivery taking place. You know, Joe Jack and Enrique are there. And he goes outside and he sees like a smaller version of the Wagner Char King, the Wagner Little Man. And Peggy comes out like, yeah, your father wanted to surprise you. This was supposed to be set up after you came back from the contest and you were supposed to grill together. And Bobby's like, oh, he only cares about this because I'm on a team. And, you know, Peggy's like, no, this has nothing to do with you being on the team or meat or anything like that. He is happy that you have something in common. I mean, he's never chartered a bus for me, and I've asked plenty of times. So then Bobby's like, Mom, take me to the contest. He arrives to the state competition and realizes that he's it. Like, he is it for Heimlich County Junior College. And, you know, they say that there's no shows, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go it alone. Bobby's like, I'm all in for every event. We see the bus. It's still in the ditch, and Bill and the guys find Hank and team because they were trailing the bus, and even Bill's like, oh, I'm glad we followed you instead of reading the map. Otherwise, we wouldn't have found you. And they go into the Beefabago, which is just Dale's Bugabago, but instead he removes the ants and puts like a giant flank steak on it. A phone call comes in to Boomhauer, and it's Peggy. And so Hank takes the call, and hears that Bobby's competing, and everybody's like, oh, no, he's going to ruin everything. And Hank's like, what is it? I mean, yeah, this contest can be tough, but you all have this great love of beef. And he's like, I only care about winning. And another guy's like, yeah, I'm a vegetarian. And Hank's like, wow, you're even weirder than Bobby said. I'm going to go sit in the back with the cow. At the state competition, Bobby goes to his stations and he does all the different contests. And, you know, he's like, oh, I'll do my talking on the carcass as the other teams try to psych him out. And Bobby's doing really well. In fact, he gets himself into the finals against Texas A&F. And the goal is to determine if this piece of meat is prime or flawed. And just in the nick of time, Bobby's team shows up. And despite Bobby pretty much carrying the team and bringing it to the finals, they all kick Bobby out since he messed up last time. And, you know, Bobby goes up to his dad and it's like, ah, I'm pretty sure I saw a flaw on the chime button. And Hank's like, are you sure? And Bobby's like, yeah. And he's like, well, now's your moment to speak out. And so he gave Bobby the courage to speak out. And everybody thinks it's prime, both on the ANF side and on the Heimlich County Junior College side. But then Bobby just speaks up. It's like, hard bone. You can see that there's hard bone on the 11th chime button. This is too old to be prime. Sure enough, that was a flaw. Heimlich County wins state at this point. So Heimlich County wins state. And everybody's all happy. And Bill tries to go in for a hug for Peggy, but she rejects him. And so he goes and hugs the cow. And as Bobby's lifted on the shoulder, Hank gives a handshake to Bobby, which, you know, Hank being Hank, like, that's probably like the most congratulations he could ever give to his son. So, yeah, I like how this, you know, Hank stood up for Bobby and is like, you know, if you think this is the right thing to do, then speak your mind. Don't let them bully you around like they have been.
Oh, man. I love this because I feel like Bobby got overconfident the first time, and now he's like in his zone. He's getting everything right. He's moved them to the finals. It's just, this is just such a great scene. Also, I guess a little trivia. Well, I work as a pastry chef. I'm a baker in real life. Two voice actors here are, I don't know if you know who Duff Goldman is. He's the, I think it's called the Ace of Cakes or something like that. Was the show?
I do not.
But he's a famous cake decorator and baker. And he is one of the voice actors in this episode. He plays the A&F lead bully who's making fun of Bobby. And the judge in the show is actually his assistant baker, who's also very popular. They had a show together, so that That's another reason I really like this episode too. It's a great episode, but I love those two guys. If you ever watched, yeah, it's called Ace of Cakes. If you ever watch it, it's just a fun show. Yeah, but it's fun like having them in the episode. It's, I don't know, Bobby's. I love when Bobby's just on fire, and this is a great one. And the way that Hank interacts with him at the end, showing him that like he really believed in him, and like it's just such a great. It's just, this finale is so good. I can't emphasize that anymore.
I also like how Hank comes around and sees Bobby's way, like when he's actually around the guys and realizes how weird they are. Because, like, I think so. The way Hank operates is nothing is just like a job or a pastime for him. He's all in on it. Like, he sells propane, but his whole life is propane. He loves football. He didn't just play football. So, like, for him, for them to hate meat, but only care about, like, the competition and winning is just weird to him. Like, he doesn't understand how you can how you can separate the two. But now we get to the finale, which is both heartwarming and a little sad. But let's jump into it. It ends with the guys grilling on the patio, both Bobby and Hank, and it's the evening, and Hank's on his charking, and Bobby's on the little man, and you know, as the steaks are grilling, the smells are filling up the neighborhood. We see the Super Newsom phone's house, and they smell like, hey, let's go and raid the hillbillies' barbecue. And they're like, oh, I've got homework. Or Connie's like, oh, I've got homework. And Con's like, oh, you're already three grades ahead. Let's go. Which is an interesting character development for Con, because it's like the first time we see him just like, hey, let's have a good time. You don't need to study. Then at the Gribbles, we see Dale giving Nancy a head massage, and you know, she thanks him, and he's like, oh, I might not have John Redcorn's magic touch, but I do know a lot about the female body on account of I saw a possum get teared apart, torn apart. And then they smell the meat, they go, and then we see the Kleinschmidts, Lucky, Baby Gracie, Luann, and they smell the meat, and they head out, and then we see Boomhauer, he throws his wallet on the dresser, he smells the meat and leaves. And then we see a zoom in on his wallet, and this is like when we finally figure out what he does for a living. Although there is a fan theory that it's fake, we see that he has a Texas Ranger badge. And so it's, you know, assuming that it's real, that means that Boomhauer is a Texas Ranger, which is never even hinted at throughout the series. There is a fan theory, though, that it's fake and he uses it to pick up women. But I guess we'll figure out for sure here in the reboot or whatever. And everybody comes out to eat and get steaks. And it's like, wow, we're going to need more. And then there's one steak left on the little man. And Bobby turns to Hank and it's like, well, Dad, this looks like the last one. And then Hank's like, yeah, well, you're just getting started. You'll be grilling your whole life. And then the final shot pans out and shows like Arlen, Texas, which mirrors what the first shot is from the very first episode. And this ends King of the Hill. I do want to note that Bill just randomly walks in. He's the only person who doesn't get a scene, but apparently there was a deleted concept. They were originally going to show that Bill has been keeping a piece of his wedding cake in the freezer this whole time. And he goes in and he gets the wedding cake out as if he's getting ready to eat it, but instead he throws it away, which is like symbolic of him finally moving forward with Lenore and moving on with his life. But they remove that scene, which I'm upset about, because that actually would have been a nice scene to add instead of just having him show up.
Oh, that would have been so perfect. Because, well, honestly, I'd never thought about it before, but now that you mentioned it, that would have been so perfect. Just because everyone is getting this great. The people who I feel like needed a good wrap up and got a good wrap up. I mean, like, Con and Min and Connie, just kind of, you know, we can enjoy life every now and then for them. Mm-hmm. And then for Nancy and Dale, Nancy's like, yeah, we had that episode where Nancy picked Dale over John Redcorn and the hair falling out stuff. But for her to kind of just be like, I did choose right, and like, I did choose love, and she does love Dale, and just to be like, that felt great, his massage. That was just a great conclusion to that story, I mean, Boomhauer is Boomhauer. He never, it's not like he had a lot of flaws, you know, I guess just, he was just always kind of there. Not that he's a bad character, but I feel like he didn't need anything to be concluded. But it was cool seeing, you know, I guess his career. And then Luann and Lucky and Gracie, I feel like, you know, I think they're okay. They're going to be okay.
Yep.
But Bill, that would have been such a great... I don't know. Every now and then, if I watch this episode, I tear up at the end because it's just like how sweet and how great everything is. That Bill last scene with Bill would have been like, I don't know. That would have ruined me maybe. Just because I really want to see Bill move on and I really want to see Bill be successful.
Absolutely. Like, I know it's for laughs and it makes for a good show and stuff to see like Bill be miserable and making an idiot out of himself when he's talking to women or just being socially awkward and stuff. But really, like, when you get down to the nuts and bolts of things, like, you really want him to have a happy ending.
I mean, especially at the end, right? Like, if this is the last episode and they didn't know we're going to come back all these years later, like, why not let Bill have a happy ending? Why not everyone on the street is coming to, like, a great... Not a stopping point, but a great second chapter of their lives. You know what I mean? Like, it's new beginnings. I don't know. It's good. I love. Yeah. Was it the Wagner Jr. or the Wagner Little Man?
Yep.
First of all, it is basically a second grill. Like, it's just a smaller version of Hank's grill. It's not like a child's one. I think it's made out of all the same things, just smaller.
Yep, just a smaller version. It's not like, you know, like a Play School, My Little Grill or something. Just a smaller, maybe about like 60% the size or something like that.
And it just, it's such a great scene seeing them grill together. It's, and then when he's like, this is the last one, you'll be grilling for the rest of your life. Ah. This moment, it's so beautiful, guys. King of the Hill can be hilarious and funny, and then it can be heartwarming and touching as well.
I also love how this one ended, because I guess the way to put it is, like, the original final episode, when they thought it was going to be over in season 11, Lucky's wedding suit, kind of tried to do, like, the end... wrap up or whatever, then all of a sudden they realize that no, they've got renewed or whatever. But so in Lucky's wedding suit, after they get married, they're walking down the aisle and you kind of see, like, in the wedding, like, all the minor characters are in the audience or whatever. So, like, even like Junichiro and Tammy Duval, the prostitute, and all these minor characters are there in the audience just to, like, oh, hey, remember us. And this is a farewell to them. But I feel like it didn't actually, there was no actual closure there. It was just them walking away and the day ending and the guys having beer or whatever. This one actually felt like there was closure to it, in the sense that, like, we know their lives are going to go on. Hank saying you're going to be grilling a lot more after this. But at the same time, it's like, we see kind of this character growth of the Super Nuisance Phones, to where they're not pushing Connie too hard and they're letting her enjoy herself for once, which we almost never see in the show. Then we, you know, we see Dale and Nancy and their relationship is getting stronger. Boomhauer, we finally get closure on what he does for a living, because it's never made clear what he does for a living through all 13 seasons. I guess Luann and Lucky was just showing that they're doing fine. Like, there was nothing in particular there, but I think ultimately it was showing that, like, yeah, Luann is on her own, which is different from what we see in the very first episode, where Luann is, you know, kicked out of her house more or less and now has to go and live with the Hills. Now she's on her own and she has a baby and a husband. So, you know, we see that growth in Luann. And yeah, sadly, we don't get the Bill scene for whatever reason, but now we get kind of this closure to the story. We kind of get a closure to the characters, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, that other ending when they thought it was gonna be over, that was a fun like Easter egg throwback. Like, look at all the things we've done in the past. This is like a true finale. I would say that even at like all the shows I've watched, all like regular sitcoms, dramas, whatever, this is like one of my top five favorite finales ever. It's just so perfect.
I agree. This has got, like, I'm thinking of all the finales I've seen. This is one of the better ones for sure. There's a lot of shows I saw their last episode and I was like, eh, it was all right. I mean, you know, they capped it well and kind of ended the series on a note, or, you know, wrapping it up in a nice little bow and stuff. But this one was kind of a heart, like it's a tug at the heartstrings, especially because we also see the growth in Bobby and Hank and their relationship. Like, they finally found something to bond over. Now, granted, there's been several episodes where they've bonded over something, but I guess this is something that's going to stick. Like, the comedy stuff didn't stick, and the roses we never hear about again. But presumably, because they bought a grill and stuff, we're going to keep hearing a lot more about the steaks, or presumably we would had the series continued. So Bobby and Hank finally bond, and yeah, everybody kind of gets a nice ending, or a nice send-off, if you will.
Yeah, it's just great, because you can kind of imagine what's going to happen next. Like, they're just going to live life, and, you know, maybe crazy things will happen, but everyone seems to be in just such a great setup for whatever's next to happen. You know what I mean? Like, you're not worried about anyone when you kind of think about what could happen next.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And granted, you know, I mean, it's what, 2009 when this episode aired. So King of the Hill's been off for quite a while now, 13 years, almost 14 years. And it'll probably be 15 years by the time it airs on Hulu. But, you know, this was the last episode. Nothing was new. And there have been rumors throughout the years. Like, even in the mid-2010s, there were rumors that they were going to bring back King of the Hill. And I don't know how much of it was just wishful thinking, or if there were actual whispers. Like, I don't know, Mike Judge was shopping the idea, but nobody would buy or whatever. But, you know, there's always been rumors about it, but it never happened. And, you know, there are even rumors when we started the podcast, but it was still just that, rumors. It wasn't until recently that it was confirmed that it's coming back. But this was a really good way to end the series, and I still think it is one of the best ways to end the series. I still don't know how they're going to pick up from that when they reboot it. I'm, you know, skeptical is maybe not the word, but I'm a little concerned, or a little iffy, if you will. But at the same time, you know, maybe they'll do a good job, because it also wasn't one of those ones where they couldn't just pick up again. It's not like Roseanne. I don't know if you remember Roseanne, but I'm spoiling a 30-year-old show. Season 9 was supposedly an entire, like, dream, or it was a book. So Roseanne becomes an author. And, like, everything that happened in season 9 did not happen in real life. It was all just part of her book. And they reveal that at the end of season 8, when Dan has his heart attack, he dies. He didn't survive, like what's suggested in season 9. But then season 10 comes around, Dan's alive, and they pretty much pretend season 9 didn't happen, because that was the only way they could do it. Otherwise, they couldn't make the show work if they wanted to bring it back. Whereas here, with the way it ends, they could pick it up pretty easily.
Yeah, nothing's really changed. Nothing's crazy. So, I mean, let's see. I'm hoping it's really good. They're bringing, like, the creative team seems like they're coming back. Like, so I'm just hoping they keep the spirit of what King of the Hill was back then.
I am hopeful, since pretty much all the original players are coming back. The creative team, a lot of the voices, sadly, because Brittany Murphy and Tom Petty are no longer with us, they're not going to be on the show anymore. Hopefully they do not recast Lucky and Luann, because, quite frankly, Brittany Murphy was Luann. She was Luann for 13 seasons. Lucky was a newer character, but Tom Petty was Lucky the whole time. I think recasting the characters would just do them an injustice, and they should respectfully write them out of the show. But, you know, because all the key players are coming back, I think that there is a good chance that'll still be good. The big hope is that Hulu gives them creative freedom. Because if Hulu controls too much of it, that's where I would worry about the content or how good or how bad it will be. If they have at least give them the same level of creative control that Fox gave them when during the original run, then I think they'll be fine, if not more control.
Agreed. I just hope, let's hope for the best. You know, I'm just going to hope for the best and we'll watch it when it comes out. Maybe we'll go through the episodes on the podcast.
We might. I mean, that's a very good chance. But yeah, that's it for the King of the Hill episodes. We do have one more episode next week where we're just going to kind of wrap it up, kind of end the podcast on a good note, or at least temporarily end now that we know the show's coming back. So please join us for that. Until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.